Welcome to Live with Passion and the teachings of Father Cedric Pazegna. This program is designed to help deepen your relationship with God and empower you to live with greater passion. We invite you to log on to www.frcedric.org for more inspiration. That's www.frcedric.org. May the Holy Spirit touch you as you listen now.
The following teaching is presented by Father Cedric Pazegna and is entitled, The Prodigal Son.
The Lord be with you. Proclamation from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Now this, of course, is the story of the prodigal son, or some scholars call it the prodigal father. And comes from Luke chapter 15, and it's a whole chapter, so I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but I will talk about the whole thing. But let me just start at verse 18. That's chapter 15, verse 18. This is the young man. After he took the inheritance, he went off, squandered it in loose living. Remember what happened? He got hungry, slopping with the pigs in the mud. And then this is what happens. He said, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and I've sinned against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Just treat me as one of your hired hands. So he got up, and he came to his father. But while he was yet at a distance, his father saw him, and he had compassion, and he ran to him. He hugged him and kissed him. And the son said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand, shoes on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. And let's eat and make merry. For this son of mine was dead, but he's now alive. He was lost, and now he's found. And they began to celebrate. The Gospel of the Lord. I don't know if you've ever seen Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper. It's a very beautiful portrait of Jesus at the Last Supper. Leonardo da Vinci, of course, the great artist and inventor. And I heard a tradition about this painting that's very fascinating. They say that he wanted to paint real people to make this portrait. So one day when he was at church, Leonardo, he looked up in the choir loft and he saw it. He saw him. The perfect person he thought would be Jesus. He was a young man, good looking, very innocent looking. So he asked him if he would pose for the person of Jesus, and the man said yes. So he painted him very beautifully. In the next few months, he found the other 11 apostles, and he painted them into the picture. You know, they sat and posed for him. But he couldn't find the person of Judas. Look though he may, he couldn't find him. Finally, about 11 years later, he went to a prison, and there he saw a man bitter, angry, looked like he had gone through a lot in his life. His face was all drawn, you know, and he said, that's the one I'm looking for, the person of Judas. And he asked him, he said, may I paint you into the Last Supper? And the man said, yes. So now here he was painting him, and as he's painting this young man, the man looked troubled. And then after a little while longer, he began to weep. And so Leonardo said to him, he said, what's wrong? Why are you crying? And he said, Master, don't you recognize me? And he said, no, have I ever met you? He said, yes, 11 years ago. You see, you painted me. I was the person of Jesus. And what I like to say is that within every one of us, there is a Jesus and a Judas. And oftentimes what we can do is betray ourselves. We have this holy side and this rebellious side. And I call it self-sabotage. People go to church, but yet they look at things on TV or the internet that they shouldn't be looking at. Your doctor has told you not to eat high cholesterol foods, stay away from sugar, yet you sit there in front of the TV eating cake and eating Doritos and all the things that you shouldn't be eating. It's called self-sabotage. You know that your budget is low and you don't have a lot of money, but you still take your credit card and you overspend. That's sabotaging your life. It's betraying your life. Within each of us, there's a Jesus and a Judas. And tonight, what I want you to do is to pick the one issue that you have in your life and to be honest with yourself. Don't run from it. Don't deny it. Look at it. Where are you betraying your life? Where do you commit self-sabotage? Is it gluttony? Is it lust? Is it anger? Is it pride? Is it laziness? Is it envy? Is it greed? You know, all the seven deadly sins. Everybody's got something. And what we do is, you know, as good as we are, I've heard Eucharistic ministers, lectors, even priests come to me in confession, "Father, I feel like such a hypocrite. Because, you know, I'm a churchgoer, I love God, but yet I have this sin." And what God calls us to really is authenticity. And he calls us to sincerity. And he calls us to consistency. And what we got to try to do is to face our issues, to face our sins so that we can move through it and not let it have a hold on us. And is there any area, as I said here tonight, those of you watching by TV, do you have an area that you're struggling with? Well, I'm going to ask you tonight not to run from it, not to deny it, not to neglect it, but to face it, to look at it. That's the only way that you can change. See, we're about change, folks. We're about moving and progressing and changing. I talked about that last night. But in order to do that, you have to face your issues. You can't just deny it or act like it's not there or let it keep controlling you. You really do got to face it and try to get to the roots of it. And that's the way you can move through it. Well, the young man in the story, he sabotaged his life. I mean, he had a good life. He's a member of the family. His dad's rich. He had it all. But that wasn't good enough for him. He was a slave to pleasure. He was flippant, prideful, selfish. Oh, that's the big sin, I think. You know, people are so selfish. And so he said, "Give me my share of the inheritance." He's a slave to pleasure. He wanted everything. He wanted his cake and he wanted to eat it too. And you can't have everything, folks. You know that. So he asked his father for his share of the inheritance. He took it. You know, I've read the commentaries on this. When he did that, for all intents and purposes, he was cutting himself off from his father, from his family, and he was saying, "Look, Dad, you're dead. Just give me the money. I want to go live my life the way I want to live. I want to be in control. I want to do my thing. I want to be the life of the party, and I want to have pleasure." See, that's that whole pleasure pain principle that motivates people. You know, we stay away from pain and we go toward pleasure. That's why we overeat. That's why there's lust. That's why there's all these different things, because we want pleasure. Well, pleasure is good, but it's got to be in balance. So anyway, here's this young man. Takes the food, he takes the money, off he goes, and he had a good time. I mean, he was the life of the party, and, you know, he's spending the money, he's probably gambling, having fun, you know, he's got women and everything, because later it says loose women, so he's having a good time. But all of a sudden, something happened. The money ran out. You know, there's a high cost to low living, and the money will run out, and your life will run out if you keep living like that. Any of you have gambled and committed adultery and done all these different things, you know the misery that it causes. That's what happens. He ends up, as the story goes, he has to get a job. So he gets a job. I guess he didn't have a whole lot of education. Maybe he didn't go to tech school, I don't know, but the only job he could get was working with the pigs in the mud. So, you know, there's something about those pigs that in Jewish society, you know, that they were unclean. So he's slopping with the pig, with the unclean pigs. I don't know if you've ever been to a farm, but pigs stink. They're smelly. They don't smell good. And, you know, here he is day after day. He stinks. He's muddy. And his stomach's growling. See, it's the opposite of pleasure. It's pain now. He's had the high life. Now he's got the low life. And that's exactly it. You know, you go too far some way out of balance, and it'll bring you down. Sooner or later, it will bring you down. And you will live in misery. So he wakes up. This is key now. You've got to understand this. He comes to his senses, the Bible says, and he says, even the workers at my father's house have more than I've got, and here I am slapping with the pigs, I'm hungry and everything. He said, I'm going to get up and go to my father. Oh. Now, that is so huge, because I have studied conversion. I've been through a conversion. Conversion's ongoing. You know, it's you can have a major moment, but then it's a journey. And I've studied conversion. I've written a book on change called You Can Change. And there are classic elements in conversion. And one of the most classic elements, a common element, a classic moment that I think has to happen in conversion is there's a suffering, a confusion, a bewilderment of some sort. Something isn't going right. And then the person wants to change. You see, if your life's going well, you got money, you're not suffering, your relationships seem pretty good, you're not really hurting, you don't want to change. Why change? Everything's going good. But if something starts going downhill, you start going through a confusion or suffering or pain or something's going on in your life, you're slopping with the pigs in the mud, that can wake you up. And I want to say something to you right now. If you're suffering inside and you're going through something, perhaps God is using that, not giving it to you, but using that to bring you closer to Him. I can name numerous examples. See, this is a common element in a classical moment in conversion: suffering, confusion, bewilderment, something's wrong. For example, 12-step program, those are people. Join Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, the whole Anonymous programs, and there's many of them, Gamblers Anonymous, Sex Anonymous. What happens is usually they have, in order to quit denying their issue or their sin, in order to quit denying it, what they do is they have a moment of what they call bottoming out. It can be, if you're a drinker, for example, it can be you get into a car accident and you kill somebody, or you get in a fight and you don't even remember it, or you wake up in prison and you don't know how you got there. It's a bottoming out experience. Or, for example, if you're an overeater, you weigh yourself in the morning and you've gained 30 pounds, and finally it just hits you. It's called a bottoming out experience. You see, and that bottoming out experience hurts so much that you say to yourself, you have an inner dialogue, I've got to change. That's what's going on with this young man in the mud. See, Jesus is a master storyteller. He knows human dynamics. And here's this young man in the mud saying, I've got to change. And if you're in the mud and you know that you got to change, well, then make a move. Quit living with the pigs. Of course, most of you are really good people. You wouldn't be here on a Tuesday night, but you know, I've been in the confessional now for 16 years, and I know what you're doing. So, and I know what you're doing out there on TV, too, because I've heard it. And then, of course, parents will come up to me, Father Cedric, my son or my daughter has fallen away from the church. Now we're hitting close to home. Just about every parent has a child who is not going to church, if they've reached teenage years or above. And most of the parents are hurting inside because they feel like it's their fault. And I can understand that, you know, that would be hard. But I have to tell you, you know, it's not always your fault. You've given them a foundation. You've done the best that you can. They can make their choices. But here's what I want to say. Parents will come up to me, Father Cedric, what do I do? My child has fallen away from the faith. I've prayed for them. Is that it? Well, You know, never say just pray. You know, what do I do? Just pray for them? Never say that. I always tell them, you know what, pray. Now, here's a little wisdom here. I know this is going to hurt. It's a bitter pill to swallow. Pray for them to suffer. Told you it was going to hurt. Pray for them to suffer. Because, as I said, the classic element of conversion is suffering. If you want your child to make a move with God, with the church, come to Christ, I really believe that they need to go through something. So pray for them to slop with the pigs a little bit and hopefully come to a new awakening. And I know that sounds kind of harsh, but I can say that from my own experience. Because I remember when I was 19 years old, falling away from the church, I was blind toward God, wasn't even sure if God was really true. What happened to me is I went through a suffering, a breakup with a girl, some other sufferings that I was going through in school, and I started waking up in the morning, sitting on the side of my bed, and hearing this voice. It wasn't the voice of God, it was the voice of God, but it was my voice, my conscience. God speaks through your conscience. And I would sit on the side of the bed, and I'd look, and I could hear, I'm not happy. Something's missing. I knew deep within that something was missing. You see, our hearts, this is what one of the great saints told us, our hearts are made for God. And our hearts are always going to be restless until they rest in God. You see, no matter what you do, whether it's gambling or drinking or drugs or sex or all these other things that the world offers, it will never satisfy you. Only God can do it. And I knew I had a hole in my heart, and I knew I needed to change. And that's what moved me to a personal relationship with God. I did something about it. I got up. I made a move. And you know what I did? I started reading the scriptures. I started praying. And I started turning away from the sin in my life the best I could at that time at age 19. And that opened me up to God in such a beautiful way. And that's exactly what this young man did. See, remember now, we're talking about the classic elements of conversion: suffering, bewilderment, confusion, a hurt of some type that moves you. You got to have something that moves you. Otherwise, you're just going to stay stuck. And I think my role as a Catholic priest is to get people moving. And I talked about that last night. I want you moving from selfishness to selflessness. I want you moving from going backwards or staying stuck in a certain area. So name the area in your life. Look at it and say, you know what? He's right. It's making me feel like a Judas. It's dividing me. It's a Jekyll Hyde. And I want to get moving. I want to change. And I also want to say, you know what? Change doesn't just fall on you. Everybody says, I want to change. I want to be different. God, change me. Well, what God will do is he'll give you the grace to move and to take responsibility for your life, to face your issues, not to run, not to hide, to look at them, and to get to the roots of your issues. For example, an overeater, maybe they have a low self-image. Well, you got to look at that. What's causing the overeating? You know, alcoholics, for example, people that are in recovery, that are drinking too much, that's not the problem. That's the symptom. The problem is what's causing them to drink in the first place. Are they a controlling person? They have too much pride? Are they angry about everything? That's what you got to look at, because that's controlling, that's causing the drinking. Well, anyway, make a move. That's exactly what this young man did. Speaking about making a move, I heard this story about this 80-year-old woman. She dated a 90-year-old man. They went out to dinner. And she was telling her friend about it. Now, 80-year-old woman dating a 90-year-old man, telling her friend about it the next day, she said, I had to slap him 3 times. She goes, oh, did he get fresh? She said, no, I thought he died, and I tried to wake him up. That's what I'm trying to do here tonight. Come on, I'm going to give you a slap, just like what they did at my confirmation. Because really, I don't want you to be afraid. And I don't want laziness. I want you moving. I want you going forward. And that's exactly what this young man did. Finally, you know what? I'll give that young guy something. He may have been a wicked sinner, squandered everything, but he had passion. You know, there's too many people that are so lukewarm, so dead, so dry. Nothing excites them. They never take risks. They never do anything with their life. But this young guy, I bet you he did something with his life. I mean, he was passionate. And he knew that he made a mistake. He saw what his life was how his life was turning out, and he got up. And the word in the Greek there, it's a resurrection word, arise. He arose and came to his father. Every one of you that comes to confession tonight, and those of you watching TV, I hope that you'll go to confession or confess to God right where you are. Every one of you that's going to go, you are going to have to do that. You are going to have to get up and go. You're going to have to face embarrassment. You're going to have to humble yourself. And you're going to have to risk. You are going to literally have to get up. And when you do that tonight, I want you to think about resurrection. That the power of God is raising you up to do this so that you can be ready for Easter and for the resurrection and for your own resurrection. And I'm really praying that, you know what, fear is not going to stop you. Laziness won't stop you. Denying your issues won't stop you. This is so crucial. This is what the whole season of Lent is about, that you move, that you get up, and that you change. Okay, now, you ever watch a sporting event like football? And here you got the quarterback going back, about ready to pass. Then they do a split screen. There's the coach, you know, watching what's going on. You see the coach, you see the quarterback. Okay, let's go split screen right now. Here's the young man. We just saw what's going on in his life. He's slapping with the pigs in the mud, suffering, hungry. I'm going to get up. Split screen. Let's go to the father. What's the father doing here? Well, father in the situation, in this story, it's interesting. I've learned something about fathers. Of course, I'm a priest, I'm a father, but I've learned something about those of you who have had children. Fathers are good at waiting. For example, you wait for your children to be born. You wait for them to speak their first words, hopefully dada, not mama. You wait for them to take their first steps. You wait for them to get out of the bathroom in the morning. You wait for them to get off the phone. You wait for them to get a job and get out of the house. So fathers are good at waiting. So, split screen, what's the father doing in the story here? The father is waiting. And he's watching. And how do we know that? Because when the son finally does come back, remember, the father sees him from a distance. So that tells me that he's not out on the farm. He's not watching TV. He's not sitting at the table eating. He's at the end of his driveway waiting for his son to come back, hoping, believing that his own flesh and blood is going to make a move. Because when the son does come back, he's there ready for him. And what I want to tell you is that we sang that beautiful song, Hosea, comes right from the prophet. And the prophet said, these are the words, the word of God. The prophet said, long have I waited for your coming back to me. What is God doing in your life right now? Well, just what he's doing in the story. He is waiting. And he's watching. And I love that song. Long have I waited for your coming back to me. And for some of you, long have I waited for your coming back to me. I know because I hear your confessions. 30 years, 40 years. What are you waiting for? Today is the day of salvation. Now is the acceptable time. You know, a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm not even sure there's a God. Look it, I've been sinning, I've been living like this, and nothing seems to be going wrong. Not from God's perspective. God is saying, look it, I've been giving you the time, I've been merciful, I've been giving you the space, and you're seeing it the wrong way. You're seeing my mercy as I don't exist. It's my mercy, I'm giving you time, and you're thinking I don't even exist. But the time is going to come. Now is the day. Today is the acceptable time. Don't presume God's mercy, or in your distorted thinking, think that he doesn't even exist. He's being merciful to you to give you time to come back to him. Now, today. Okay, so God's waiting. That's what he's doing in your life. He's waiting for you to make a move. That's what's going on in the story. Speaking about waiting, did you ever hear this story? There's three men, fathers-to-be. Their wives are all having babies. And they're all in the maternity waiting room, awaiting word about their wives who are all having babies. So three of them, and they're all sitting there, and they're real nervous and fidgety. All of a sudden, door barges open. It's a nurse. She comes in. She goes, "Sir," to the first guy. "Sir, congratulations, you just had twins." He jumps up and he goes, "Yes, we were hoping for twins," and he's happy and everything. But he says, "You know what, I got to tell you something, that's a coincidence. I work for Twin City Insurance Company." So they're sitting there rejoicing, all of a sudden, doors barge open again. Here comes the second nurse into the second guy. "Sir, congratulations, you're not going to believe this, your wife just had triplets." And he jumps up. He starts passing out cigars. He goes, "Triplets, hot dog," you know, and he's all happy and everything. "That's a coincidence. I work for Tri-City Motors." "Huh." They all look at the third guy, and he's turning white as a ghost. He gets up, and he starts heading for the door. And they go, "Come back, come back, come back. Where are you going?" He says, he's having a panic attack. He goes, "He goes, I got to get out of here. I work for 7-Up. So God's waiting and watching. Did you ever hear the song by Bette Midler? God is watching us at a distance. It was out years ago. And some people thought that song, you know, God is watching us at a distance. Well, anyway, some people thought that means that God's far away, at a distance he's watching you. But that's not what she was singing about. If you listen to the song, it says that although the earth is full of war and hatred and violence and all this different thing, from a distance, it looks blue and green and beautiful. And then she says, God is watching us from a distance.
Please listen next time for the conclusion of Father Cedric's inspiring message. We believe you enjoyed Father Cedric's teaching. It is our heartfelt hope that these programs will intensify your relationship with God and you will sense a new surge of strength in your life. Father Cedric has many resources, audio CDs, DVDs of his television programs, as well as several books to help you in your spiritual journey. Please log on to www.frcedric.org or call 321-474-0997. That's www.frcedric.org. Don't just live. Live with passion.